What's up, guys, and welcome back to the Impact Defense Podcast. This is episode 124. We have brought back our resident security
person.
No, don't. There we go.
Thomas says, don't call me an expert.
Enthusiast.
Enthusiast. I thought about that one. Yeah. All right. Anyway,
security, we are going to get... Security buff?
Something like that. We're going to get back into how to be more private while you are online.
Some guy that likes privacy.
Just be careful where we go.
All right, as we're getting into the episode, first off, our first ad spot, as always, is Blackout Coffee. This morning, we are drinking Morning Reaper. Oh, I see what Jada, I was really curious as to what Jada was doing with her cup for a second. Yeah, she really likes to show off her cup. She's got the Blackout Coffee.
I was doing the Simba.
Oh, I didn't see that. Oh, Kylie's got the Simba thing going on the other side of me. So, yeah. Anyway, Morning Reaper, I really like it. It's not the strongest, which I think Jada wants, you know, coffee to punch her in the face in the morning. So I think she really likes it a little stronger, but it's a good medium roast. It is really good tasting coffee.
I appreciate the lack of blueberries in this one.
Me too.
Yeah, I thought this morning, so we're having Thomas back on, and I know he was a huge fan of blueberries in his coffee.
Yeah.
And I know Jada's not, so I thought, well, I'll just mix a pot of Morning Reaper. So
I just don't think blueberry flavored things should exist. Blueberries are fine.
Well, anyway, getting on with Blackout Coffee, head over to impactgear.live/coffee, and that will take you over to Blackout Coffee. You guys can pick up any of that. All of that that you do will help support us. It only helps us when you actually purchase something over there. It's not just that we talk about it.
Purchase.
Yeah. So get yourself some.
Don't just think about it.
Really, really good coffee. That's impactgear.live/coffee. If they don't have another promotion going on, go ahead and use the coupon code IMPACTDEFENSE because that will always at least get you 10% off. All right. And I do believe we do have a new story of the day, correct?
Okay, so in yet another case of stalker using Apple AirTags. This man is facing charges right now for AirTagging his ex-wife's car. It is said that he used it to track down her car and put roses on the car. And then when confronted about it, after the ex-wife contacted his daughter to ask her to get the stalking to stop, he confessed that it was him who put the AirTags on her car because he wanted to see her and her children.
Go ahead.
Quick explanation, AirTags are like little RFID tags or whatnot that can, if they can find an internet connection or some other thing, just find another phone that's compatible with whatever that system is, you are able to track and see where this tag has popped up in the world based on Bluetooth connection, NFC connection, Wi-Fi. So tagging a car that the AirTag is synced to her phone as well or synced to their home Wi-Fi or something like that may be the case. Yeah, he was able to stalk.
Yeah, it's scary because, I mean, I guess you could do that with Tile or any other thing like that.
And these
things
are small. I mean, they're not, you know.
I love the article's quickly adds, in another, it actually says, in another case of someone using Apple AirTags to stalk someone and the AirTags alerting the victim.
Yeah.
And, like, I appreciate that they do alert the victim, but the guy already tracked down her car and put roses on it, so.
Well, I mean, I get it, and they're in a weird situation there. It was funny, though, because I don't have AirTags. I do have an Apple computer here at the school. I do have, an iPhone and things. I do generally kind of, I either play in the Apple or Linux ecosystems. And I was on my phone at home yesterday, and it alerted me that because I had used my AirPods on the computer here, that my computer could now see my location. So now it's across two different Apple accounts because there's one for the school and one for me. And, but it is good at least that it does kind of warn you that, hey, they can see your location.
And that's one of the things to keep in mind, like with this privacy stuff, there is some benefit to giving up some level of privacy. You just got to be aware of what you're doing, who's got that information, what you are giving up.
Yeah.
You know, a good example is my wife and I travel a lot for my job, not a lot, but I do travel. When I travel, I'm on the other side of the state. I'm driving through Raleigh, driving through Charlotte, driving through all the areas you don't want to drive through in the first place because this traffic is so nutty.
Yeah.
And so for years, my wife would panic and fret, did I get to where I was going? Am I okay? Am I this, that, and the other? Because I would forget to call her or text her because I'm in a work frame of mind. So we started doing the whole location sharing in Google Maps,
mm-hmm.
which means Google is now tracking me everywhere I go.
Yeah. Well, they were doing that anyway, right?
Yes, but now I'm telling them to. But the trade-off there was the ability for my wife to just pop open her Google Map app and see where I am. Did I make it to Kinston? Did I make it to Charlotte? Did I make it to wherever?
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I will not remember. Yeah. You know, to text her when I'm on the road. So, yeah, there's a trade-off. There's a trade-off. That's a lot of what to discuss today.
Yeah. All right. So. Anything else on the
Nope, that story? Was it. Okay. It was pretty short.
Yep. Okay. So, yeah, we have brought Thomas Tedder back on to talk about this time, how to be more private while you're online.
Well,
last time we talked about why.
Right. So. Yeah. Last time was more about the theory or why you'd want to do it. And I do want to bring up one thing from that last podcast again. And that is, you know, for those who kind of balk at the idea or kind of scoff at the idea of why should I be concerned in the first place? I'm not doing anything illegal. I'm not a felon or anything. And that's fine. Most of us are not. I mean, I truly believe 99% of this country, we're not criminals. We're not doing anything wrong. But when it comes to privacy, even when you have nothing to hide, that doesn't mean you still don't have something worth protecting.
Right.
Oh, where do we jump in? I want to start with a couple caveats before I get too far into how to be a little safer digitally. First off, as Brian's alluded to before, I've worked in tech for 25 years now, 25, 26 years now. I've seen a lot, I've experienced a lot, things like that. But what I have to bring to the podcast today, what I have to share, these are sort of the methods that I've discovered for myself, that I've seen others talk about online, that I ascribe to. These are all just suggestions on what I use and what I think others would benefit from. If you got, you know, a tech nerdy person in your family, they're probably going to disagree with me at some point. Yeah. That's fine. There's many different opinions. There's many different ways. All I want to say to start off with is, this is how I feel. You can be best protected online and keep yourself safe. But there's many different ways to do it. And I'm not always right. So I'm going to start with that. Another thing to keep in mind, there's a lot of things I'm going to cover. Make your changes gradually. You may hear three or four or five things that go, well, that sounds really neat. That sounds like something I want to do. Don't do three or four or five things all at once.
Right.
You know, make these changes gradually. Find one or two that really speaks to you, that really stands out. And there's one here that I'm going to suggest everyone do today. But, you know, make your changes gradually. As you make your changes, you stop doing one process and you pick up a new process, things like that. Don't just quickly ditch and forego the old process or the old application or the old whatever. Kind of keep it handy. So if the new way just, you know, goes to heck in a handbasket, you can still, you still got your old method. You still got your old way. You're giving me looks.
It was the heck in the handbasket.
The heck in a handbasket. Also keep in mind that with everything I cover today, there's always new data leaks out there. There's always new vulnerabilities in applications. There's always new changes to terms of service. What I generally feel is a safe practice today may in a month's time no longer be safe because something's happened and everything. I mean, I find it neat. I told Megan it's going to be neat to go back a year from now, listen to this, and see how many of the things I said, oh, here's your safe browser, here's your safe this, and, you know, in 3 months we find out, oh, no, all that information was going to somebody nefarious. Yeah. And, you know, so, you know, do keep that in mind. This is what I feel is safe today. This mm-hmm. may not be what's safe a year from now.
Right.
And that's part of, in my mind, I think security and privacy and things like that. It's more of a journey, not a destination, to sound real cheesy.
Yeah.
But I do believe it's a process that changes. The things that I felt like were secure a few years ago, I do not feel like are secure now. So things do change. But anyway, there's my caveats, as Paul Harrell would say. There's my caveats.
So there's just no achieving online privacy.
I think there is for today, but that doesn't mean that's going to be secure tomorrow.
Yeah, there's no final achievement.
Yeah, yeah, it is a process. Things do change, especially in the world of tech. I mean, there's always new vulnerabilities. There's always a company that purported itself to be very responsible with your information that turns around, no, they're not. You know, so things do change. So those little caveats. Mainly just so nobody nails me to the wall 3 months later because I'm here, you know, whatever. So to start off with, I'd like to cover the things that I think will benefit everybody right off the bat. And that's your choice of web browser. You know, of course, web browser is a thing you use to pop open either on your phone, on your laptop, whatever, to go out there and surf the web. You know, popular ones are you know, your Google Chromes, you know, your Firefox.
That has
your
like almost 90% of the internet. Basically.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The user adoption for Google Chrome is just insane.
Yeah.
It used to be, you know, Microsoft, their Internet Explorer was like the dominant, you know, browser. But yeah, you know, your web browsers, your Internet Explorers, your Edges, because I shouldn't say Internet Explorer anymore because Microsoft just pushed an update to try and finally kill Internet Explorer in most situations and pushing everybody to Edge. Edge, which is based off of Chromium, which is the same thing that Google Chrome's based off of. So it's kind of funny that Microsoft is following Google's footsteps. But anyway, y'all don't care about that. But what I want to start with is your choice in browser, just right out the gate, can benefit you or hurt you, I believe, in the level of privacy you can attain on the web. Google Chrome is a bad one. Anything from Microsoft, whether it's Internet Explorer or Edge, those are bad ones.
Yeah.
Mozilla Firefox is a relatively secure, privacy-centric sort of browser done by Mozilla. The problem, though, is Mozilla still kind of collects information about the users for themselves. Some of it you can turn off. I don't know if you can turn it all completely off.
So they're kind of like Apple in the fact that they still collect all the information. They just keep it in-house and don't share it out with everybody else.
They want to be the ones to profit off your information, not anybody else.
Yeah, so it's a little better.
Yeah, but
It's not great.
It is. Gotcha. But what I'd like to do is suggest options, suggest changes. Me personally, I've been using the Brave browser, B-R-A-V-E. I've been using that one for a few years. Brave is actually, if you download Brave, it will look very, very similar to Google Chrome. Mm. And the reason is Google Chrome is not a browser that in and of itself is built ground up by Google.
Right.
Google Chrome is based off of an open source movement or open source software package called Chromium. And so Brave is also based off of Chromium, and so they look very similar. Microsoft Edge is based off of Chromium now, though they really gave it a different coat of paint. It doesn't really look similar to Google Chrome. But anyway, I'm a big fan of Brave. Brave is more privacy-centric. It is less about collecting user data than a lot of the other browsers. If you're a big Firefox fan, there's another fork of Firefox that's popular called LibreWolf, LIBRE Wolf. And if you're in that Firefox community and you just love Firefox and won't leave it, consider LibreWolf. Give that a look, because that's another one that sort of disables a lot of that telemetry. Adds a couple security features, things like that.
I tried Firefox for a while. It was okay. I was never really a huge fan of Firefox, but now I have been using Brave a lot more, and I really, really like it. Mm-hmm. It is a very good browser.
And Brave will run on everything. It'll run in Windows. It'll run in Mac. It'll run in Linux. It'll run on Android. It'll run on iPhone or iPad, iOS. Mm-hmm. So you can run that Brave browser everywhere. Brave does a couple things that's a little different. You know, the reason we have advertising on the internet in the first place and everybody trying to get your personal data is people trying to make money and figure out how to sell you things.
Right.
And of course, the other side of the coin is, you know, we're popping out on the internet, going to these websites, using these services, using these fun little things for free, you know, technically. And so somebody's got to foot the bill for the servers and the developers and, you know, to keep the lights on. And so that's where a lot of this advertising comes from, is trying to fund these websites that are sort of provided for free, so to speak. One of the things that Brave does that I opt out of is they do this thing called Brave Rewards. Have you seen that? Have you seen that?
I've seen it. I have not really messed with it.
Brave Rewards is their own kind of way of exposing you to curated advertising.
Okay.
Advertising where they've sort of quote-unquote vetted to make sure they're not trying to steal too much of your personal information in the ads. And so the Brave browser will show you these vetted approved ads, and you actually get a virtual currency back that you can use for different things. I disable that. I don't need ads. You know, one of the things I suggest, no matter what browser you're in, even if you choose to just remain in Google Chrome, even if you just choose to remain in Firefox, disable your password managers that are built into those. Mm. Disable your wallets, your credit card managers that are in those. The same companies that, you know, we might have privacy concerns about don't also need our credit cards.
Right.
And that's one thing I don't want to sound too tinfoil hatty, but the thing is, like, a lot of these companies probably aren't really nefarious. They're not really out to harm us. They're out to make their money. They're mm-hmm. out to, you know, maybe collect private information to determine what ads to show us and things like that. They may not have any real malicious intention with their collection of our private data. The problem is, when your big companies are collecting our private information, even though they're not nefarious, what about the bad guys that try to hack them and steal that information? They have a data leak.
Yeah.
And you know, even though you may have said, okay, I'm okay with this company having some of my private information, you know, even a web browser, you know, I'm okay with, because everything you're doing in the web browser, unless it's kind of geared not to, such as LibreWolf or Brave, and there's a few others, but those are the two I suggest. Even though these are web browser companies, if they have data leaks and the bad guys get the information, then you're still up the creek.
Yeah.
You know, so that's why privacy is a bigger concern than just, well, I'm not going to give it to the shady guy in the parking lot, you know, that's asking for it. You got to be mindful of that. And so the one thing I want to really suggest today is people change their web browsers. Mm-hmm. You know, go ahead and download LibreWolf, put it on your phones. I don't think LibreWolf is iOS or Android compatible, but I know Brave is. Go ahead and change your web browsers. That's a great first start. And on top of that, not just your web browser, but I actually use a few extensions to further sort of harden or solidify the browser. One of them that's I feel like one of the most popular ad blockers in a browser is uBlock Origin. That's an odd name. Mm-hmm. And it's spelled U, the letter U, uniform, U, block, B-L-O-C-K, Origin, O-R-I-G-I-N. And you can do a search for that. It'll be in your browser's, you know, little app store, extension store, whatever they call it. And uBlock Origin is just a really good ad blocker that blocks out most of that stuff anyway. You know, I run a couple different ad blockers at home, and I'll mention one of them later. And, you know, all my web browsers have ad blockers and things. And I always find it funny. I know it's a real thing. You know, people talk about, hey, you know, we were having a family discussion today about, I don't know, alternators, you know, for a car. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden I look on my phone and there's advertising for alternators when I'm on a website, you know, Thomas, what's going on here? And, you know, I think there's maybe some confirmation bias going on there of, you know, just chance, just coincidence. Thomas, we were talking about Christmas trees, you know, at the beginning of December. And then I look at my phone and there's ads for Christmas trees. Well, and, you know, it's Christmas time.
It's December.
But there's also sometimes where I've had people tell me, no, I've had very specific things that we've never talked about before, and they show up.
Yeah, I think I told you about that last time you were on here.
Well, I don't ever get to experience that because I run all these ad blockers. So I don't ever get to see the ads. And so that's another thing I push people to do, is to run ad blocking. And it's kind of odd at work, and I'm not really going to say more than this. I run an ad blocker at work on my corporate machines.
Right.
And I have complaints from people because they don't see ads. So figure really? That one out.
What?
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever in my life complained that I didn't see ads.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, one of the things, if you've never run an ad blocker before, and you start turning them on and they're actually working, they kick in and they're doing their job, one of the first things you'll see is some of these websites you're used to will look absolutely broken. Because it's really? Where's all the information? Where's that? There used to be tons of stuff on the sides and, you know, and at the bottom of the page and in between articles. This doesn't look right.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, I'll tell the people, well, turn your ad blocker back off. Oh, okay, it looks right now. Okay, turn your ad blocker back on. Now you yeah. see what it's doing.
Yeah.
You see how much advertising that we've kind of become numb to that we're constantly bombarded
with.
So
just out of curiosity, something like that, does that block, running an ad blocker like that, does that block ads in, like, YouTube and stuff like that as well?
It depends on how the services go. You know, one of the most popular things is I want to block my ads in Hulu.
Right.
You know, well, you know, a lot, it depends on how, and companies are getting better with this, how the ads are presented.
Mm-hmm.
Ad blockers, at the end of the day, all they're doing is blocking the server that's hosting the ad. They have this massive list. The ad blocker I got at home tells me it's blocking a million and some domain names.
Yeah.
All right, so it's and that it knows of, and I'm sure there's more. But it's blocking a million and some websites that are nothing but companies that serve ads to your news sites, right. to your sports sites, things like that. And so all an ad blocker does is when your browser says, oh, I'm supposed to show an image from ads.com here, your ad blocker says no. That's all an ad blocker does.
Okay.
So when it comes to things like your Hulus and your video streaming, they're hosting it all in-house on Hulu servers.
Yeah.
And so that's stickier. You can't always block your ads in certain scenarios based on the way in which that company is presenting the ads.
Right. Okay. So, now, I was just curious. I've never run an ad blocker. That's one thing I have never done. And I was curious how those things worked as far as with stuff like mm-hmm. that. I wasn't really sure.
Yeah. It's really just blocking the websites that's hosting them, and then so nothing appears in that little of the web page.
Gotcha.
Because it can't find it because your browser is being blocked from finding it, if you look at it that way. But yeah, uBlock Origin, that's a great plugin for your mm-hmm. browsers. Privacy Badger, and this one's by the Electronic Frontier. Oh, I got that wrong. Electronic Freedom Foundation, EFF. I know them by the abbreviation. Yeah. I don't remember what it was. EFF's a great organization. They're very privacy security, pro-consumer, pro privacy minded. They have one called Privacy Badger. That's like the little animal, BADGER.
I've heard of that one.
Yep. That one's good at blocking like your cross site tracking cookies and things like that. One of the other things they do while you're out there on the web is as you're clicking links and as you're going from one site to the next, a lot of these sites will start asking your browser, where did this person come from? And they're tracking you as you go across the web because the sites are going, well, hey, how did you find me? I want to know. I've been paying for advertising for, you know, whatever on this website. Did you come from that website? And so there's tracking cookies and different ways to do that. Privacy Badger blocks a lot of that.
Okay.
And then one of my favorite things to talk about today is Bitwarden. Bitwarden, B-I-T, Warden, W-A-R-D-E-N. Bitwarden is a password manager that can also host your credit cards, that can also host your online identities, as in it can autofill those fields for you, like what's your home address, what's your work address, this, that, and the other. Bitwarden is a great plugin that works on phones, that works in browsers, everything, that will store all your passwords for you, autofill them as you hit websites, store your credit cards for you, autofill them as you hit places. It's all stored securely and encrypted, and we'll talk more about encryption in a little bit. And it's free for like a lowbrow version,
mm-hmm.
or it's $10 a year. You know, I'm a big proponent of if it's good software, if it's helpful software, give the developers a dollar. You know, it's okay to pay people for things you use on your computer.
Now, I had started the Bitwarden using that. At this present moment, I'm still on the free tier, but that is something that it's like, okay, yeah, this is really good, and I'm definitely going to move up to that.
You can afford $1 a month.
I think I can handle it.
And like even with Bitwarden, you can buy like the family account. I think it's like $40 a year, and that's like six accounts or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, I've pushed others, like, you know, buy for your family, you know, make your, I'm a big proponent of getting your passwords out of your web browsers and into some password manager. And I feel like Bitwarden is it's a project that's open source. Open source just means anybody can look at the code that actually created the application, so you can know what's happening if you're a coder.
So just out of curiosity here, you talking about that, how much, because my whole thing starting with the password manager started in Safari. So I would let Safari manage my passwords for a long time before I started using Brave and before I started using Bitwarden. But like, how much of that type of stuff is transported back to the browser or the developer of the browser,
okay,
whatever.
Now is probably a good time to discuss the difference between open source and closed source, and how those apply to a lot of what we talk about today. All of these applications that we're using, operating systems, everything, they all boil down to that code that lonely developer in his cubicle is tirelessly slamming away at his keyboard all day entering. You know, we've all seen the movies and the TV shows and things like that where you have the hacker or something there tapping away and you just see a bunch of text on the screen, you know, writing code, you know, things like that. Well, everything is code at the end of the day. A developer has written code that when taken and compiled is a way of transforming, we'll say, human-readable English text code into machine code. Your processors and whatnot in your computers, they can't understand when mouses clicked do this. They don't understand that. They understand ones and zeros.
Right.
You know, at the end of the day. And so machine code is that really, really low-level coding that some geniuses in this world actually understand, and they are certifiable geniuses to understand machine code. Machine code is what the computers, what the devices, what the smartphones actually understand. The human readable code that somebody sit there typed out is what creates the application, what makes things happen when you boot up your computer.
Gotcha.
And you have a desktop and you have a web browser. That's code. Open source code is where the developer has gone, here, you can see the recipe. You can see what I did. You can look at every single line, take all this code, compile it yourself, see if you get the same program. You can, you know, I don't have to have somebody vouch for me. You can prove for yourself that what I'm saying is happening behind the scenes in this browser window is actually happening or in this operating system. That's open source. The source code is open for the world to see, so to speak.
Gotcha.
Closed source is, no, this is confidential company property, NDAs, copyright, trademark, blah, 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 blah. No one can see how the sauce is made.
Right.
You know what I mean? That's closed source. Your big for-profit companies, your Microsofts, your Apples, your things like that, their bread and butter is the software they're selling. And so they do not want to open source their code.
Right.
So that everybody can see, well, how did you create that start menu, Microsoft? You know, how did you have this little background process happen, Microsoft? How did you do that, Apple, with Safari and your password management? And so that's closed source. So that is the long answer to your question of how do you know what is Apple doing in Safari with the password management?
Right.
It's closed source. At least to my knowledge, Safari is closed source. It's not an open source browser.
Right.
So you don't know. And so for a lot of privacy-minded folks, that comes into play with whether the application, the operating system, the service that you're using, is it open source, is it closed source? To take it back to the Bitwarden discussion, Bitwarden's open source.
Right.
You can actually take the source code for the Bitwarden client and the server that hosts it all. Because that's the other thing, great thing about Bitwarden. If I'm on my phone and I save a password in Bitwarden on my phone, it syncs to the Bitwarden server. And then when I get into my laptop, that same password's there.
Right.
You know, it follows me. It syncs everywhere.
Right.
Great thing about Bitwarden's open source, you can actually take the source code, compile it, run your own server, compile your own clients, and have it all on your machines.
Right.
And not have it, you know, secure stored anywhere else. And, you know, some people that are real tinfoil hattie, and I don't blame them, but that have the time, will actually roll their own Bitwarden servers and installs and run it all themselves. And all this, a lot of this stuff I'm talking about, they'll compile their own applications from source code so that they know. Bitwarden's also one of those companies, they do third-party audits. They have other companies come in and audit what they're doing, audit their code, and you know, give them thumbs up, thumbs down. Bitwarden's a good company.
Yeah,
I strongly suggest people use Bitwarden for your password management. And like I put my credit cards in there. I put other, you can put secured notes in there. Like if you have, I never remember my son or wife's social security number.
Yeah,
but I put in Bitwarden. And one of the great things about Bitwarden is everything is encrypted with a key that only you know. The thing that helps make Bitwarden so secure, you've got a buttload of passwords in Bitwarden.
Right.
And what they strongly suggest you do, and what I strongly suggest you do, you come up with one unique long password that you've never used anywhere else. Mm-hmm. That is your Bitwarden password. And you don't use that long, secure Bitwarden password for your Facebook login. You don't use it for your Gmail login. The only place you ever use that one password is with Bitwarden. That's your one key to unlock the entirety of Bitwarden, and now all your passwords are there, and you don't have to memorize them all. I've actually got to the point, Bitwarden has a great password generator in it. Mm-hmm. I don't know most of my passwords anymore. Bitwarden does.
Yeah.
Most of my passwords are those crazy long strings of 16-character things that I would never hope to even be able to type in right, you know? Yeah. So Bitwarden's a great thing. I strongly suggest people to use Bitwarden. Throw the dev a bone. Give them $10. Next thing I like to cover is web searches. You know, Google is who they are because they do such a great job with providing you, what am I trying to say? Not reliable results, but
curated.
Consistent, accurate, accurate, applicable results to the search question you entered.
No, to some extent.
Curated, there's another discussion.
We even talked about this on the podcast on one episode a while back. Jada was trying to do some research for some one of the classes, something we were writing or something about ways to prevent, what was it? It was like ways to prevent
child abductions
and stuff like that. And it would not give her the results. It just would not. The crap that it came up with was just like nothing. But then she typed the exact same thing into DuckDuckGo and got exactly what she was looking for. I think you were looking for statistics or something like that, right?
Yeah, I was looking for something about statistics, and then Chrome or whatever we were using just would not. No. Yeah, it wouldn't.
You were doing the Google search.
Gotcha.
Same company.
It wouldn't bring up accurate results. It was all about child behavioral statistics. It wasn't. It didn't have anything to do with what I was actually searching, which had to do with child abduction and prevention, and grooming, and you know, privacy and things like that. Wouldn't bring up anything related to it. I searched like all of the surrounding pages and everything. It just didn't exist as far as Google was concerned.
Yep. That was how I got her on DuckDuckGo.
Yeah, but DuckDuckGo, I typed it in and it was just like, oh, abduction statistics. Look at that.
Curation of search results is a real thing, and I'm going to try hard to keep from getting political during the podcast. So I will leave it at that. Curation and accuracy, in my mind, are two different things. Right. I think Google is very accurate at results.
Yeah. Yeah.
They do a great job of, if it's not curated, if you're looking for a specific thing, they do return a good result. And so what Google did is they turned around and said, hey, advertisers, we do a good job at getting results back to people that they're looking for. Do you want us to put your ad in front of them when they're looking for that thing that's similar to what you sell? And so that's where Google's making their buttload of money,
right,
is their advertising, because they do a good job with that directed advertising. How do they do a good job? Well, they know you. They're watching you. They're keeping record of what you like.
It was human trafficking information.
Okay.
And I will say one more thing, because y'all brought up DuckDuckGo. I wasn't actually going to bring up DuckDuckGo today because they're also known to curate.
Yeah, I know. Then that has started really since that point. So I've stopped using them at this point.
Yeah. There are basically three search engines that I suggest to people. And for a lot of folks, they don't understand what a search engine is, and that's fine. Not everybody's technical. Not everybody cares. They just need to find something online. When you, in Google Chrome, by default, just start typing something in that address bar at the top of the page, it is sending your question, your whatever, to the Google search engine. That's where you're getting results from. You can also just choose to navigate to a different website to do your searches from. The one that I use the most is also Brave related. It is search.brave.com.
Yeah.
So you can just simply type that in up there. You can, you know, Brave will have ways for you to either make it the default in your browser, this, that, and the other. I like Brave results. They're not always, they're not as accurate as times as Google. There's a lot of times I'm doing searches for very technical things at work, very specific errors and event IDs and things like that. Brave's not always great at that. I do sometimes go back to Google and use Google when it's not something privacy-minded. You know, when when one of the work computers has an event ID and I need to find the right knowledge base article, things like that, I'll a lot of times go to Google because, you know, that's nothing about me. But I do like to start with search.brave.com. Other popular privacy-minded secure search engines that are really good, that one's startpage.com. Mm-hmm. Startpage.com is really good. They help you with a couple browser plugins, too, if you want to click around in there. And there's also one I've never heard how to pronounce it correctly, so I'm going to pronounce it wrong. It's quant.com. It's Q-W-A-N-T. Q-W-A-N-T.com, Quant. That's another good search engine to use. I don't use Google for anything that I feel like is my personal everyday life kind of searches, things I'm interested in, things I'm looking for. I don't use DuckDuckGo anymore for that either.
Yeah.
And DuckDuckGo, I don't think that DuckDuckGo is doing the whole privacy invasion thing. I think they are just curating results so that sometimes some subject matters you may want to search for, they're deciding what your result should be instead of just saying,
here's what I would. I'd much rather just let the vast internet kind of show me what.
Right. And then I can make my own decision.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm an adult.
As to whether, you know, something's appropriate or not. But yeah, there's web searches. Before I go further, because the next couple things, I've already mentioned encryption once or twice. The next couple things kind of deal a little more in encryption, or at least on the back end. A lot of people don't quite understand what encryption is, but whenever I talk to somebody about it, I promise them you already understand, you know, from that 50,000 foot bird's eye view, you already understand encryption because most everybody has seen A Christmas Story, you know, with little Ralphie.
I have not.
Oh, no. Oh, no. I'm old.
No, we're the same age.
No, I'm a year older.
Oh, we graduated together.
But no, like, I can't believe y'all don't know Christmas. Okay.
I've never watched it.
Growing up, and for those of you that were probably shaking your head, like, well, yeah, I know Christmas Story. I'm not living under a rock.
Yeah.
Christmas Story, you remember Ralphie getting the secret decoder ring or whatever for the Little Orphan Annie program? Okay, keep that in mind. Keep that in mind as I'm talking. For the rest of us, I'm assuming there were Cracker Jack boxes when you were a kid. Oh, no. Okay, yeah, yes. Okay. Okay. Do you guys ever remember in your cereal boxes and anything, getting the secret decoder rings and having the
toys got worse.
Oh.
Yeah, by the time they came along.
And we were broke, so we didn't get the boxes with toys. We got toasted Wheat O's or something instead of Cheerios. So.
My weekly cereal choice revolved around which toy was in that box this week. I was the problem child that was feeding the marketing beast.
We got like Life cereal.
Have you guys ever seen those kind of ciphers where you have this secret decoded or a secret encoded message of jumbled up letters and you get some kind of answer key that tells you, well, you know, these three letters B, R, and P, well, B equals T. Oh, so I replaced a B with a T, and R equals H, and you know, or the secret decoder rings for other old people like me that's listening or watching. When you'd get the secret decoder ring with the encoded message on the cereal box or the Cracker Jack box, and you had to use the ring to figure out what all the different letters corresponded to, and then you have, you know, decoded the secret message. You've at least seen that kind of stuff. That's what encryption is. So in the tech world, what you do to hopefully secure data from folks being able to read that data that you do not want to read that data, you encrypt it. Encrypting is a way of taking that text file, let's say an email, that's a popular thing that, that folks send encrypted. You know, you might with some of your doctor's visits or you get information or whatnot, you might have to reply via an encrypted email service or things like that. You might have seen that. Folks for their job may be required to use encrypted services for sending emails with confidential HIPAA-related information. Encryption really boils down to taking that text document, that text file, that email of, hey, Brian, here's my social security number.
Yeah.
And wanting to secure it so that only Brian is the only person in the world that can read that email, so that if Jada, for some reason, intercepts that email, because she's an evil hacker with a man-in-the-middle attack sitting in between me sending the email and you getting it, she just sees jumbled-up text. Encryption is jumbling all that text up into a bunch of gobbledygook. Decryption is the other person at the other end having the proper keys, the proper resources to decrypt that gobbledygook and make it a normal message anymore. Like our secret decoder rings, like the little orphan Annie drink your Ovaltine message, like all of that kind of stuff. That is what encryption and decryption is. And while encryption and decryption is almost always an open source kind of application or protocol or project or what have you, what makes encryption a little complicated is to make sure that you are the only person who can read my message.
Right.
We have to share encryption keys and make sure that we keep up with them when we both encrypt and decrypt. Well, not decrypt, but when we encrypt our messages to each other. And I have to make sure I keep those keys separate from the ones I use with Kylie to communicate securely, and keep those separate from the ones I use with Jada. It's like having a different set of keys for every email you send.
Okay.
And that gets confusing. That gets frustrating.
But that's all happening in the back end. That's not something that anybody has
to depends.
Think about.
It depends. Yeah, okay. I guess right now I'm thinking more email-centric. Mm-hmm. And so my email just goes to you. And so, yeah, that's a lot of times you purchase encryption services from somebody else. Or encryption is, well, they call it encryption's either symmetric or asymmetric. Symmetric encryption means there's just one password that you've come up with.
Mm-hmm.
One long password, you only know it, and this file, this email, this whatever cannot be decrypted without this one password. And
gotcha.
Then you share it with whoever you want, and then they can open up that file and decrypt okay. it, blah, blah, blah. Asymmetric is usually used with email. That's the other way around, where you got to share keys with everybody and keep up with mess. But I just wanted to really cover encryption because that's talked about a lot, and a lot of people don't really understand what's happening. Encryption is really just jumbling up that text message or that text data, and the only person that can unjumble it, that can decrypt it, that can make it look like normal text again, is the person you've either given the password to or that you've given that decryption key to. Well, that's backwards still. Nobody's going to know I'm backwards, except the tech guys. And you're already stopped listening to this anyway because I've made too many mistakes. Anyway, encryption. I want to talk about next a couple applications to help secure you and your whole digital life online. The first one being VPNs. A lot of you might have heard of a VPN before, and that's it stands for Virtual Private Network. It's abbreviated VPN, Victor Paul November. And what a VPN will do, a lot of you probably have to use them for work to get access to your corporate files from home, from the coffee shop, whatever. What a VPN is, it's a client that runs on an endpoint such as your laptop, your phone, your desktop at home, and it creates a secure, encrypted connection to some other location. And then all the traffic that flows between your device and your work server, your what have you, is completely encrypted, so anybody intercepting it, any man in the middle kind of attack, they just get the jumbled up stuff.
Mm.
And so your computer, your device, your VPN client handles one of the encryption keys, and the destination, the server on the other end handles the other, and they can decrypt. And so, you know, like I said, a lot of you may be familiar with VPNs for work. Well, for your personal browsing, you can use VPNs as well that protect your web browsing from anybody else seeing what you're doing or where you're going, such as your internet service provider, your Time Warners, your CenturyLinks, your Lumens, your Windstreams. It protects from Man in the Middle, you know, other agencies or things like that that may be trying to snoop to see where you're going. What VPNs do for your web browsing is it takes all of your web traffic and sends it to another server somewhere. And most VPNs come with huge lists of servers. Like, do you want to pop out in New York? Do you want to pop out in Florida? Do you want to pop out in Croatia? Do you want to pop out in Mozambique? You know, where do you want to pop out onto the internet? And what happens is all the traffic from your phone, your browser, whatever, goes first to Mozambique, we'll say. We'll use that like that. We'll use that. It goes first to Mozambique and then out to the regular internet. Mm-hmm. And so if you go to Facebook.com via your VPN and out through Mozambique, then Facebook is going, Jada is logging in to us from Mozambique. This is kind of odd.
Yeah.
And what's more, Facebook would only know that because Jada is logging into Facebook. And so Facebook sees a login. If you're just surfing the web, we'll say anonymously, going to do a Google search to look for shoes, and you're going to Walmart because that's where the first shoe result took you to or whatnot, all Walmart sees is traffic from Mozambique. So what the VPN is doing is taking all your traffic and you are jumping on to the World Wide Web from a different location
right.
in the world.
Like I've seen where people, and I may or may not have used this as well, where you people log into an account, like some type of streaming service account from a different country mm-hmm. because you know there's this whole other, mm-hmm. there's a whole other.
There's
you
know, geolocation blocks or things like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, you get to watch, you know.
And where that protects your privacy. Now, of course, like I kind of probably started off with a poor example, like Jada logging into Facebook via Mozambique. Well, if you log into a website specifically, I mean, they see your login. They know that's you. They know this traffic is you, and it's coming from somewhere else in the world that's abnormal. But for a lot of us that are just surfing the web or doing whatever and we're not logging into websites, all of a sudden they see traffic from this random server in Mozambique. Mm-hmm. And if somebody starts trying to figure out, well, what's going on there, and everybody else is VPN'd in using the Mozambique server, and this guy's looking for shoes, and this guy's looking for shirts, and that guy's looking for alternators, and this fellow's looking for a new computer, then all of a sudden this one server in Mozambique, that's weird. It's like all kinds of crazy stuff. There's like nothing makes sense. It's all jumbled up, and this person's looking for naughty stuff, and this person's looking doing their email, and this person's doing that. It's a way of being private. And or having privacy and security through obfuscation, a way of there's so much white noise, it's like they can't tell, well, what is Brian doing?
Yeah.
Well, they can't tell what Brian's doing because there's 10,000 other people popping out the same server with 10,000 other different things they're going to do. And so when you start tracking things back via IP address, you see just a ton of noise, and you can't, and this is something for privacy and security.
Right.
They can't really narrow down what it is that Brian's doing right now. Now, Brian goes and logs into Facebook.
Yeah.
Well, you've logged into Facebook. But that's another thing, too, is to get around geolocation kind of geolocks. A real popular one in England, they have BBC. That's their big TV channel, mm-hmm. TV service, what have you. And so there's a lot of programs. Excuse me, you can't stream online unless you're geographically sitting in England.
Okay.
And so a lot of people will use a VPN to pop out from a London server, from a whatever server, and they look like they're sitting geographically in England, so now they get access to BBC. Flip side, there are some countries with some real draconian restrictions on the internet, and it won't allow their citizens to go to certain sites to look at certain things.
Yeah.
And people use VPNs because, you know, the government hadn't found that VPN yet to block it, or the VPN service. And so in certain countries where you're restricted as to what you can do on the internet, they'll VPN out a country where it's not restricted.
Yeah.
And so VPNs are another way to keep things private, to keep things secure. And everybody and their brother has a different opinion as to which VPN service is the best and the most secure and the most privacy-minded. My personal opinion, there's two that I suggest to everybody, and that is Proton VPN, P-R-O-T-O-N, Proton VPN. By the way, you do have to pay for a VPN if you have a free VPN, and some of them allow you a free trial. That's fine. If you have a free VPN that never charges you a dime, that should raise an eyebrow because they got to make money somewhere. They're running a service. They got to keep the lights on. They got to keep the servers cranking. If you find a free VPN that's not a trial or a watered-down version to then entice you to buy, don't trust a free VPN. Unless, you know, like I said, it's their trial version. We want you to buy our version here. You know, that's one thing. But Proton VPN, I'm a huge fan of. And they do have a free tier. And I tested their free tier for a few months before I paid. And the free tier is not that fast. And the free tier, I'd have disconnects and problems. I don't have that with the paid version. But there's also another one called Mullvad. And I'm assuming I'm pronouncing that right. And that is spelled Mullvad. It's Mike, Uniform, Lima, Lima, Victor, Alpha, Delta, Mullvad VPN. Both Mullvad and Proton are based in Switzerland. Switzerland, that's one of the things to keep in mind, too, with your VPNs is where they headquartered. And I'm not going to get into all that. All I'm going to say is VPNs that are based in Switzerland. Switzerland has some of the most pro-privacy, pro-security laws on the books with their government. And I'll just leave that at that. So VPNs. VPNs are a great way to protect your privacy on the Internet. Proton and Mullvad are the two I suggest. Neither of them are free for, like, the full version. Text messaging. Text messages are like email. Email is sent in clear text. If I send an email to Jada, anybody in between me and Jada can read that.
Right.
There's no privacy there. Text messaging is the same. If I text Brian, now granted, it's harder to get access unless you're Verizon or the company sending the texts back and forth or others who may have access. But text messages are sent in clear text. Clear text means that anybody in between can read it and see it. I'm a big fan of what's called the Session Messenger, S-E-S-S-I-O-N. Now, I still text with people, but I don't text things that are personal. Like when I'm texting my wife, it's nobody's business what I'm texting my wife.
Right.
I mean, we're not doing anything illegal, but still, it's like that's privacy.
Yeah.
You know? And so we use the Session Messenger back and forth. So I suggest people, you know, look into that. One of the hurdles to overcome with Session Messenger, anybody else you're going to text via Session has to also be a Session user.
Yeah.
You know, you can't just text any cell phone number in the world. In fact, that's one of the things about Session. It doesn't know anything about you. It doesn't know a cell phone number. It doesn't know a name. It knows nothing. It gives you like this unique string of text that becomes your username that you then have to share with anybody else. Session. For Facebook or Twitter, other than using things like uBlock Origin or Privacy Badger, things like that in your browser or a more secure browser, whatever you put on Facebook or Twitter, the world, somebody's going to get an idea of what's there. And that's one of the things. I'm not a proponent of social media to begin with because we put too much of our life on there. And it's just too easy for the bad guys to see that, oh, wait, you're not home this week. You're on vacation this week.
Right.
Your house is empty. You know, it's a little too easy for that. It's a little too easy for stalkers. You know, I know the news article that we started off with was about the AirTags, but at the same time, you could have a stalker that's watching where you go and knows that you always like to go to this coffee shop.
Well, when we first started at, I guess, our very first ever episode on social media and self-defense, Jada was talking about a story that she read where a guy in Japan was like using reflections in people's eyes of these ladies that he was stalking to find out exactly where they were in these selfies that they were taking. It was amazing.
If you're going to be on social media, and I understand there's a place for it, you've got family in California, you want to share pictures, this, that, and the other, try to be as safe as you can.
Yeah.
Try to make every single post, every single picture private to only certain people. Try not to make everything public.
Right.
And if you're going to use those kind of apps, I suggest moving to like the Friendly social browser is what it's called, Friendly, on your Android or iPhones.
Yep.
Using Friendly there, it doesn't track you. The Facebook app is constantly tracking your GPS location. Why? Why do they need that constantly?
Yeah, I know. So they can advertise to you. You know, the last time you were on, you suggested that. I know I downloaded it. Jada downloaded it. You can have your Facebook, your Instagram, your Twitter. You have TikTok through there. You can have Reddit through there. You can have YouTube through there. That thing has become, I love it.
I will maintain stealth TikTok.
Oh, no. I'm just saying that. Yeah. I'm just talking about all the things you can't have on there. I was really impressed with it.
Yeah.
You know, after using it and everything. And then I went ahead and also did that for some other people as well. So.
Yeah. But yeah, be mindful of what you're putting out there and try and make everything private. Try and make mm-hmm. every single thing you put on social media private. There's also one that I do like because I have to use Facebook at work sometimes for some certain things. I like Frost on the Android. I've just found that recently in the past couple of weeks. It's only available via F-Droid. If you know what I just said, you know how to find it. Another thing is email. You know, I was mentioning just a second ago how email is open, or clear text, just like text messages.
Right.
There are two email services that are really good for your privacy and security, and that's Proton Mail. They're the same ones that do the VPN. They also do online file storage like Proton Drive, like mm-hmm. Google Drive.
Yeah.
And Tutanota. I'm assuming I'm pronouncing that right. Tutanota. Those are both really good, secure, privacy-minded email services. And they're not free. I mean, they have free tiers that you can send a simple little message through. But anyway, once again, keep in mind, if it's free, you're the product. So, you know, it's not always a bad thing to pay for some of this. Last thing for applications I want to mention, and I kind of alluded to this earlier, is ad blocking. And for your home, you can set up a thing called Pihole, P-I-H-O-L-E, that'll block all the ads for any devices in your home that's connecting to your home Wi-Fi or wired in. That is probably one of the most technical things I'll suggest this morning, and I'm just going to kind of leave it at that. That's something for those of you to kind of do some research on. Pihole, P-I-H-O-L-E.
This would probably be a last step after everything else on this list.
Yeah, maybe. I've left the last step, and it's
oh, you haven't? Okay.
I'm about to evangelize.
I know what you're going with. Okay.
I'm about to preach. I'm going to tell everyone the good word of Linus Torvalds. The last big suggestion that I would give to folks for being privacy minded, the first thing, just change your web browser. Do that.
I was ready.
One of the best things that you can do to protect your privacy, make yourself more secure, is actually change the operating system on your computer. That is not easy. It's easier than what it used to be. Mm-hmm. And it is something that people can fumble through, and it'll work. It is also something like if you consider yourself to have zero comfort with tech, it's something maybe to suggest to that your nephew, your grandkid, your whatever. That's the little tech genius.
Don't just assume your grandkids knows how to do that, though. Don't just assume your grandkid knows how to do that, though, because I've had grandparents look and go, I tried to get... let's say E to do it. Yeah, I tried to get E to do it, and I know he's smart enough too, but he was just like, I don't know how to do that. And I'm just like, I know you're just being lazy. I'm over here like, no, not every young person knows how to do all of those things.
Well, find somebody in your life.
Jada is the least technical person I know to be as young as she is in her early 20s.
Well, find somebody in your life that you trust that is technical and have them move you to Linux.
Yeah.
Now, Linux in and of itself is not an operating system, and I'm not going to get into a whole Stallman thing because nobody has any idea what I just said. But Linux is an operating system that is open source. It is not closed source. You can see, well, if you're a coder and you understand, you can audit every single line of everything that's happening on your machine. You can know what data is being stored locally and what's not. And the big thing is with Linux, everybody's privacy minded in the Linux world. That's the point. Not everybody.
Most everybody.
Most everybody. The thing to do is to look for a Linux distribution, and that's what they're called. Linux is sort of the engine, the heart of the operating system. It's not all the other little things like your desktop manager, your window manager. Best way to put it is like a car. Linux is the engine, but that doesn't mean every car has the same steering wheel and every car has the same seats and every car has the same. So in the world of Linux, you'll have distributions, which are different groups of developers that come together and package the Linux kernel, the Linux engine, in with a ton of other applications to create a full and complete operating system experience.
Right.
Okay. The one that I always suggest to people to start out with is the one that most closely resembles a Windows-like experience is Linux Mint. Linux Mint's really good. It's really solid. It works on a ton of hardware. In my experience, Linux always runs faster than Windows does on the same hardware.
Less bloatware. It's a lot lighter. Yeah.
It is. And even with Linux Mint, it comes in basically two flavors. It comes Linux Mint Cinnamon, which is for, I would say, machines that are like 5 years old or newer. Mm-hmm. And Linux Mint Mate, which is, it's spelled M-A-T-E, but pronounced Mate. Linux Mint Mate is for machines that are like 5 years and older.
Yeah.
So you can take it and put it on some older computers and still, it's an up-to-date, it's secure, it's patched, it's everything. It works great, and it's privacy-minded. It's secure by default. And you don't have to run, at this point, antiviruses on Linux machines. Yeah. You have to do that everywhere else. And you really don't have to do that for two reasons. Number one, all of your software is coming from a maintainer. It's coming from the distributor, or I'm sorry, the developers that created your Linux distribution. So everything is kind of vetted there that you're not downloading bad stuff for your operating system, for your applications. And another thing is, like, Linux is still a very small portion of the market share. Mm-hmm. So the hackers aren't targeting it yet.
Right.
So there's not a lot of stuff there. I will say this, and Linux runs on, like, was it 98% of the world's web servers?
Yeah.
So, you know, like, Linux is huge. It is very prevalent, just not so much on the end user.
Yeah.
But, yeah, consider Linux. Linux is even great for gaming. I've been, my gaming rig at home, I've been running Linux on it for the past 4 or 5 years. Steam is awesome for Linux. Wine is a application layer that helps you run Windows software in Linux. And I've been running Steam on my Linux gaming computer at home for like 5 or 6 years, and there's a handful of games that don't run on it, but for the most part,
yeah,
I'm still sitting there playing all these new release games securely in a private environment or a privacy minded
system. And for that, in the gaming, you use Pop OS, correct?
Yeah. Once again, there's a million and one different Linux distributions. There's even one based off of Hanna Montana, which is always the joke, but there is a Hanna Montana Linux out there.
There really is. Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, everything is Hanna Montana themed. So there's tons of Linux distributions. The one that actually I use everywhere, even on my laptop, my personal laptop, my work computers, all that, I use Pop OS. Mm-hmm. That's POP POP_OS. I don't know why they... Anyway, but Pop OS is really great for gaming, and you still have a privacy-minded environment in which to do it. Yeah, the last thing I'm going to say is just change your web browser, and I'll be done.
Yeah.
So change your web browser, move to Brave, move to LibreWolf, make your changes incrementally, move slowly. It's a process, not a destination. Watch what you put out there online. Whatever you put out there, it's out there forever.
Mm-hmm.
And try to be safer.
So my question was a minute ago, that I held back from, was you would suggest a pie hole before moving to Linux? Because to me,
I was trying to keep applications, and I view pie hole more as an application. That's why I kind of put it in that order.
All right, I got you. Because I would think that, like, you know, moving an operating system to Linux is a lot less technical, honestly, than probably putting in a pie hole.
The directions online, it's a lot simpler because you get the Raspberry Pi.
Mm-hmm.
You download Raspbian onto an SD card. It inflates itself. It sets itself up. It boots itself up. It tells you how to log into it. It tells you what to run PiHole. And for a non-tweaked, non-nerdified install of PiHole, it's really got it simplified. You know, you would have to read no matter what and learn how to install Linux on your own machine and learn how to do that. I would actually say,
maybe it's just because I've installed Linux a lot more that I've just assumed that would be a lot easier.
Now, if you want to tweak PiHole, it gets complicated. Mm. But just a base install, I think it's easier to buy your Raspberry Pi, your SD card, get Raspbian on it, run the one script, it's one command, and then PiHole's up and running, and you're done.
Okay.
So,
all right, guys, if you are enjoying this podcast, go ahead and go over to Apple Podcast, rate us, and please, please, please write a review.
Only three pleases this time.
Yeah.
All right. Also, guys, if you're enjoying this, be sure to share this with others. Tell others about this. It really helps us out, helps spread the word of this podcast. Also, if you really, really enjoy it, you can support our podcast for as little as 99 cents per month. There's three tiers. There's 99 cents per month. There's $4.99 a month. And there's $9.99 a month if you really, really like us. And you can visit our website at impactdefense.online for all of our courses, articles, merch, and so much more. All right, if you guys have any topic suggestions, we would greatly appreciate that as well. You can send that in, submit it through the website. And, I guess we will see you guys in the next one.
See you.